the subjects of Buddhism, meditation, the mind is so vast. There's an endless amount of things one can talk about. And because I've given many talks here in the past, and many of those talks have been put on tapes and CDs, I'm very glad to actually hear suggestions for talks. And I was handed an email just a few moments before coming in here where somebody suggested I talk on the Buddhist idea of mudita. It's actually a person, if I looked at the email properly, from Canada. So this is a talk this evening, a request from a long way away on the subject of mudita. The mudita is a subject which is emphasized in Buddhism, which is basically focusing on the happiness aspects of people's lives, especially others. It forms a pair with compassion. And it's fascinating that when we look upon compassionate actions, compassionate speech, and compassionate thought in the world, that it's good to realize that there's another half which should really go with compassion, which is signified by this word mudita. Just as compassion looks upon the suffering in the world and feels for that suffering, and from that feeling of the pain in the world, we're motivated to try and help and serve and lessen the suffering in other beings in the world or wherever we see it. But in the same way that we also develop this other half, this partner, this invisible partner of compassion called mudita, which instead of looking at the suffering in the world, actually looks at the happiness in the world, at the success of others, at the freedom of others, at the joy of others, and also at those things inside of oneself. Because as you all know, that people in serving, helping professions who practice compassion sometimes get so worn out and sometimes even grumpy and angry. And why is that? Because we keep focusing on the life's faults, on the pain and the suffering, and sometimes it gets too much for us. Why it gets too much for us is because we are unbalanced in the way we look at the world. And this is why the Buddha, in brilliant teaching, of saying balance your view of the world, not just by looking at the pain and suffering, but also looking at the happiness which you see in other people in life. Because sometimes it's so easy just to get really fed up and down. The government's awful, life is awful, there's global warming, there's wars in the country, there's pestilence, there's all these diseases, and if diseases don't get you, then cancer will, and if cancer doesn't get you, then Alzheimer's will. We all end up, if we live long enough, getting dementia. Whatever it is, we think, oh, isn't it terrible, sort of what's in front of us. And it's very easy to look at life like that and see its pain, see its negativity. And great, we want to help and serve to make sure we lessen those problems as much as we want. But if that's all we see, we become unbalanced. And this is one of the problems which people have, serving and helping. Sometimes they get so depressed. In fact, there was one of the members of the early days in this Buddhist society, in the days we were in Magnolia Street over 20 years ago. And a very kind lady who was one of these listeners, a person who would always find time to listen to other people's problems. And I remember her husband ringing me up one day at my monastery in Serpentine, asking if she was there. I said, no, I haven't seen her for a year or two. They found her a few days later. She'd actually jumped off the bridge, suicided, was found in the Swan River. And the reason was that she had heard all the suffering of her friends, and because of just hearing that, was unbalanced and got so upset and depressed that she actually killed herself. Very, very sad. But it's also avoidable, because especially those people in such professions which see people in pain, people in hurt, if one doesn't balance by seeing the people in happiness, then one too might get the unbalanced view of the world. So the Buddha actually emphasized to also spend time cultivating the perceptions of the happiness in life, the happiness in other people. And a lot of the time we have to do this on purpose. We have to do this deliberately, actually to look for happiness, to look for success, to look for joy, the good things which are happening in the world, which there are many good things happening in the world. If you don't think there's lots of good things happening in the world, come to our monastery. Lots of good things happening in the world. We have a great time down there. Maybe serve and look after people. And sometimes it works and people get sort of happy with what you do for them and how you help them and care for them and serve them. So what we're doing here is actually focusing on another part of life, on the happiness part of life. And by focusing on that, focusing on the success, we get this sense of inspiration, this sense of joy, the sense that life isn't all bad. We can rejoice in the goodness of the world. We can rejoice in the goodness of life. And we can also rejoice in the goodness of others. When we learn how to do this, not only does life look not so bad, but also other people don't look so bad. For example, that when we look at our people we live with, other people we know, it's just too easy just to see their faults. Loving kindness is looking in the other direction, seeing what's good about them and rejoicing in their goodness. This is a concept in Buddhism, which is from Mahayana Buddhism rather than Theravada, but it's a beautiful concept of like Buddha nature, that everyone has a seed of goodness inside of them. And it's a powerful teaching. Early this week I was giving some talks in the hospital in St. Ansos, Mercy Hospital it's called now. And I was mentioning this because the person who was inviting me to give the talk said she's got a fascination with serial killers. I don't know why, I really teased her about that. But why is it sort of that we focus on some of these really, really bad people? And why is it that when we look upon those bad people, we look upon them as like being evil? And she asked a question, is there such a thing as evil in Buddhism? I said, no, there's not evil in Buddhism, there's stupidity. That's why before the Iraq war, when I gave a speech to a demonstration, and I mentioned that there's no such thing as an axis of evil, there's an axis of stupidity. And that's centered in Washington. I said, I really got into trouble for that one, but never mind. And indeed, there's no evil in any human being. There's like stupidity sometimes. And you see that. Why people do stupid things. Because it is stupid to hurt other people or to get angry at other people. One of the teachings, the stories which I give. Hopefully I've been away for so long you've forgotten most of my stories. One of the stories which I taught in the hospital was one of my favourites. That story about that man who had the afternoon off work. And his wife asked him to go to the market to get some eggs. And as soon as he went into this market to get some eggs, this young man came up and started calling him names. Started abusing him, shouting at him, and saying horrible things about him. And the husband, who just got into the market to help his wife to get some eggs, was taken aback. I don't even know the guy. Why is he calling me these terrible names? And this man, the young man, wouldn't stop. Said some awful, rude things to this husband. And he got so upset he couldn't take any more. He turned around and went home. And as soon as he got back home, his wife said, "Oh, darling, you're back early. You've got the eggs." He said, "No. I never want to go to that market again. People are just so uncouth and so rude. Ugh, I don't want to go back there again." And those of you who are wives, you know how to deal with husbands when they're like that. You calm them down. Shh, it's all right, dear. And then when he was reasonably calmed down, she said, "What did that bloke look like?" And he described the young man to her. And the wife said, "Oh, it's him. He does that to everybody. Because what happened when he was young, he had an accident and he hit his head and he's been crazy ever since. You know, he can't finish his education, he can't get a job. He just hangs out in the market every day And that's what he just does. He just shouts at people, calls them names, but don't worry about him, he's absolutely crazy, he's out of his mind, poor fellow. As soon as the husband realized that man was crazy, all those terrible words which were said to him, all that abuse, all that unfair criticism, didn't mean anything anymore, because it came from a crazy person. And when his wife realized he wasn't upset anymore, she said, "Now look, darling, I really do need those eggs, and I'm very busy. Can you go back to that market and get those eggs for me?" And he said, "Oh, sure, I can get those eggs," because he wasn't upset anymore. As soon as he got into the market, the young man came up to him, called him terrible names, donkey face, whatever. And there's only a small number of rude things a monk can say. So donkey face is one of them. It might sound cute to you, but I've got my rules and I have to keep them. And this man called him all sorts of other names as well. But this time it didn't matter anymore because the guy was crazy, poor thing. And the husband went up to the egg store. This young man followed him and swore at him and talked in front of everybody. But the lady behind the egg store said, "Don't worry about him, he's crazy." "Yeah, I've just been told, poor thing." And they sort of talked about him with compassion because he, you know, couldn't really live a proper life. That's all he could do, just hang around the market abusing people. But he was crazy. He bought his eggs and he went home, there's no problem at all. See, when the Buddha told that story, he said, this is how you're supposed to deal with abuse. If that's how your husband calls you names, calls you donkey face, or your wife, it's called, they're crazy. Temporary insanity. So anyone abuses you, oh, they're just crazy. If you go to work tomorrow or on Monday and your boss sort of shouts at you, they must have hit their head on the weekend. That's something like that. They're crazy. So what it means is anyone who actually is critical like that is literally out of their mind. And when you're angry at somebody, you're out of your mind as well. No rational, reasonable person would actually shout and criticize others. So there's a beautiful simile here of how to deal with abuse. Notice, that person abusing you is temporarily insane. Poor thing. But what that also means is we're looking at some other part of them. Instead of looking about the negative part of them, we're looking at some other part of them. And this is what we say, everyone's got Buddha nature, in the sense everyone's got a seed of goodness inside of them. When you see the goodness inside of them, you can rejoice along with that seed of goodness, which is mudita. You can actually celebrate that they've got a tiny bit inside of them, which is beautiful, which is lovely, which is generous, which is kind, which is soft, which is sensitive, whatever it is inside of that person. If you focus and rejoice along with it, then that's called mudita. It also means you're focusing on that aspect of another human being or on life. And when you focus on it, it's amazing just how that begins to grow. This is why we do this meditation on mudita. It's to see the goodness, say, in another person and to celebrate that goodness. To focus on it, to rejoice in it, and surprise, surprise, that grows. So if you're having a trouble in a relationship, you find if you focus on the bad part of it, negative part of it, well, sometimes you get compassion, but it's unbalanced. See the good in that other person, and it's good in everybody. In the early part of my life here in Perth as a monk, I would go to the prisons to teach prisoners meditation. I was doing that for years before I became abbot and had other things. I took my time and I couldn't go to jail anymore. But maybe it's my bad. My karma was worn out. Do you need to go to jail anymore? I've done my time. But after a while of going to jails, I got to know many of those prisoners so well. And they began to sort of open up to me. And one of the things which I always found from the prisoners, you know, when they came early and they just had a chat to you, they always used to say that they all felt so bad about the crime which they committed. They said, every time we wake up in the morning, I see my prison clothes and see where I am, I'm reminding of what I did to get in here. Every time when you sort of have to line up for the muster where they count the prisoners in the jail. They're reminded of the crime which they did while they're in here. All through the day and when they go to sleep at night, alone in their cell, they're reminded of what they did. So never an hour goes past, except when they're asleep, when they don't think of what they've done. So there's no such thing as a prisoner who hasn't got guilt. They hide it and don't tell it to other people. When you get to know them, they all tell you what they've done. And this is one of the problems which I found when teaching in jail, always focusing on their fault, what they've done in the past, and never having the time to actually focus on something else, to have mudita for the goodness which is in their hearts. And many of those prisoners were very fine human beings. Human beings who'd made one or two mistakes in their life and got caught. Whereas many of us, we make one or two mistakes and we get away with it. And when you try and focus on the good things in their life, their Buddha nature, if you like, that part of them which is noble, which is caring, which is beautiful, when you actually start to focus on that and relate to that in those prisoners, that's when the prisoners really love you being around. Because imagine what it's like being in jail. Everyone relates to you as a prisoner, as a convict, as someone who's done a terrible thing. So few people relate to you as something else. When you start to relating to someone else, you see a good side in a person. It's amazing that they respond to that so well that they start to show their good side more and more. And when they show the good side to other people, they show it to themselves. When they show it to themselves, they realize they're not as bad as they ever thought they were. And there the healing, the rehabilitation begins. It's the same as our rehabilitation. When we're talking about mudita, it's not just of other people, seeing the good side of other people and rejoicing in other people's goodness. It's also rejoicing in our own goodness as well. Sometimes that when we make a mistake, we dwell upon it all day. Not all day, but all week. And oh, what a stupid thing I did. I shouldn't have done that. But how often do we actually dwell on the beautiful things we do in life? This is called mudita towards ourselves. When we look at our goodness, we recognize the kindness, the generosity, the selflessness, the beauty inside us, the Buddha nature inside us, if you wish. We look upon that and we rejoice in it, is the important point. We rejoice in our goodness. What happens when you start to rejoice in your goodness is actually you're recognizing it. We're recognizing it. It starts to grow. You start to cultivate it. And it becomes more and more. Actually, you find that goodness, that kindness, grows and grows and grows. Which is why we do mudita towards ourselves. It's actually encouraging and cultivating our inherent goodness. I know I was taught as a young man that if you do anything good, you should never pat yourself on the back or seek for praise. You should just do it and hide it. And sometimes you hide your goodness so much that not even you can find it. And sometimes we get depressed. We get fed up because we think there's no goodness inside of us. All we can see is our faults and what's wrong with us. And so sometimes we need mudita to go searching for our goodness. See if there's anything inside of us which is worthwhile. One of those stories I tell, I heard from one of the members who used to come here, but he's not here today. It was a story from a funeral in the United States many years ago. At the funeral of this elderly man, his wife gave the eulogy. And when she was describing her husband's life, she described an incident which happened when he was at primary school. And the result of this incident from a very, very brilliant teacher had actually helped him through many of the crises of his life. Times when he felt so alone, when he felt so sad and burdened with the suffering. Something which could actually help him pull himself through the dark times of life. What had actually happened was in the primary school class, there was some sort of altercation, some sort of argument, almost coming to a fight. And the teacher had stopped the class doing what they were doing before. In order to bring a sense of peace and harmony, she got the two factions, sat them down, gave them a piece of paper and a pencil, told them first of all to rule a line down the middle lengthwise of the piece of paper, and to choose one of their enemy, one of the other side they were arguing with, write their name on the top, and on the left-hand side of the paper write all the stupid things that person does, all the things you hate about them, you dislike about them, all their faults, as much as you like. And so all the kids were writing about their enemies, all the terrible things they did. And they filled out the left-hand side of the paper. Now on the right-hand side of the paper, write down all the things you like about that person, all their good qualities, all the things you respect about them. And they had to do that. It took a bit longer time, but they wrote down on the right-hand side all the things they respected and cared for about their enemy. And she told them to carefully sort of tear the paper down the middle along the line. The left-hand side, all the things you hate, screw it up, put it in the bin. The right-hand side, give it to that person you hate. All the things you like about them. And after that was done, he got his half from his enemy, all the things his enemy actually liked about him. And his wife said he kept that piece of paper throughout his whole life. And whenever he felt sad and upset, he'd get that piece of paper out and read it to himself about a person in school who didn't even like him, respected his good qualities. Mudita, focus on those good qualities. And that would pull him through many crises. And having given that as her eulogy, according to the story, about 5 or 6 other people stood up, reached into their purses and wallets, and also brought out pieces of paper, teared down the middle, or left, right hand sides. They too were in that same class. That's where they were friends. And they too had kept that piece of paper throughout so many decades. That too had pulled them through so the very dismal days of their life. Because what it was doing was showing them how to focus, not just on the faults and the pain of life, but also to focus on the happiness and the good side. It's there, but sometimes we just can't see it because we don't want to see it. The Buddha was very brilliant in his analysis of the human mind, and just to show just how we get into these ruts of negativity, where we just only want to see what's wrong. We only want to see the faults. We only want to see the rubbish side of life. It's called when we're negative, when we're angry. When we look at the people we work with. We look at the people we live with. Our husband, our wife. After a while, it's just too easy to see their faults, to amplify those faults and to hate the person we once loved. Your brothers and sisters you grew up with, people you played with, you cared for. Maybe later on in life things happen and you don't like each other anymore. Why? So often as we're focusing on only part of the story, the left-hand side of that page, we really want to actually look at the right-hand side of the page as well, the mudita side. And if we can do that, it's amazing just how we can have compassion, peace, even love for all sorts of beings. In jail, even though there was murderers and rapists and things like that, you could still have compassion, kindness, even love for all those beings once you saw the right-hand side of the paper, the mudita side. You could actually rejoice in the goodness of the rapist. Were they a rapist anyway? They'd done that act, 1, 2, 3, 4 acts, I don't know how many times, but they'd done many other things in life. It's just too easy just to sum up a person by a handful of terrible, mean acts which they've done in their life. Can you really sum up a person like that? Is that fair, ignoring anything else they'd ever done? I don't think it is fair. It's not rational. So how can we judge a person so cruelly? They have got a right-hand side to that paper. Things which are good and kind and generous and wonderful about themselves. And so have you. We also got a right-hand side of the paper. So that's why mudita actually looks at ourselves and celebrates the goodness we have. What have you done today which has been beautiful and good? When you go home at night, do you think of all the good things you've done? Or do you think about the stupid thing which you did today? The thing you got into trouble for? Your faults, your mistakes? You see what I'm talking about here? That, yeah, you got to recognize those mistakes, but not to dwell upon them. And to balance them with all the good things. Then you feel good about yourself. What happens when you feel good about yourself? You feel happy. It's a path to happiness. When you feel happy, you tend to do more good things. When you feel miserable, you go home and you tend to kick the dog. If you haven't got a dog, the cat. If you haven't got a pet, you kick your husband or your wife or whatever. You want to kick something. You want to get... This is what happens when you're grumpy, when you're unhappy. But imagine you go home really happy, or you go home from the Buddhist society here with a big smile on your face. Then how are you going to deal with your people back home? Of course, you're going to do more good things. You're going to be more positive, more caring, more happy, whatever. So from happiness, more giving to others. So this is, it's in your interest and other people's interest to cultivate happiness. So we actually learn how to cultivate happiness as a Buddhist. That's why that the basic Buddhist teachings, which we call the Four Noble Truths, you may have read that in the books, but those who've been here before know that I rearranged those Four Noble Truths into actually what really is the heart of Buddhism, the heart of any spiritual life, the heart of religion, what religion is all about. Four Noble Truths. First Noble Truth is happiness. Second Noble Truth, the cause of happiness. Third Noble Truth, that there is sometimes unhappiness. And the Fourth Noble Truth, why there is unhappiness. And this is actually what life is all about. Finding what happiness is, what its cause, why there's unhappiness, what the cause of unhappiness is. That's basic Buddhist Four Noble Truths. And when we start to understand that, we understand why the Buddha gave all these beautiful teachings like mudita, to actually to create happiness in our life. A sense of being at peace with ourselves, or rather appreciating ourselves and appreciating others and appreciating life and appreciating our government. Why do you laugh? I knew you'd laugh. How about having some mudita to your government? Okay. We all think that's a really tough one, having mudita to our government. But my goodness, it's much better than some of these other governments in the world which will arrest you and put you in jail and torture you without any sense of recourse. Of all the governments which are in the world, if you did a league table, I mean, we'd probably be in the top half anyway, not the bottom half. When you think of some of the other governments which actually run countries, run regimes in this world. So we actually have a bit of appreciation for any government, no matter what kind of government there are. Any person, any policeman, anybody who's actually trying, there could be much worse, I'm saying. And many of you probably know what it means by being much worse. Somebody told me, was it in a documentary recently? It just comes to my mind on television. Of course, we haven't seen television for 30 years. But apparently there's a documentary. Somebody in some African country, or somebody invaded their country. There were, a woman was put in jail and was tortured and raped every day. If I remember correctly, someone telling me this a few days ago. And that's right, it was actually this lady who invited me to the hospital. That's why she was telling me about this story. And she said that what actually got her through this terrible nightmare existence until she was eventually released. That's the one day after being raped and beaten, when she was laying sort of on the cobbles of the courtyard, bruised, bleeding, in pain. She looked up and saw, I think, the head of the guards, the torturer himself, the boss, smoking a cigarette with his friends, taking a break, and talking about he'd just bought a puppy for his son, and just how his son would feel so happy that when he brought this surprise gift back to his little boy. She saw a spark of goodness in her torturer, and she said that was what pulled her through that terrible time. Powerful story. I'm not sure if I'm reporting it correctly, if there was actually such a documentary recently on the television. But this is actually what she was telling me. And I can understand that that's feasible. I can understand why that would work. Because sometimes that when we get hurt by another person or by life, sometimes that when we just see the pain, when we see the hurt, sometimes it gets so black when we can't see any light at all, we want to give up. Depression, suicide, there's no hope. But when we see the Buddha nature, even in our torturers, then it gives us hope. There is such a thing as goodness in the world. We can develop this mudita, this celebration of the goodness in others. And an amazing thing happens, that it does grow. The people we are with tend to show that side more to us when we recognize it. And we show that side more to ourselves. Sometimes, as a monk, you may not think this, but I work very hard and I sometimes get very physically tired. Some of the things which I do are just teaching overseas, teaching here, doing administration, teaching the monks. Sometimes there's a lot of things on my plate. Sometimes I get very tired and I have to give a talk. Remember once just going to a meeting of the monks in England. As soon as the meeting was over, I had to get a plane from London to Singapore to teach at a conference. Straight off the plane, straight into the conference hall, and just going for it all day, teaching. The reason why I get those energies is because when I get tired, I start to focus on all the good things I've done that day. I look upon the service which I've given. I deliberately focus on the beauty inside. I forget about all the faults and the silly things which I've done. And when I start to focus on the beauty and the goodness which I've done, I'm actually bringing up the perception of the good karma. And when I do that more and more, I get a sense of happiness coming up. I'm celebrating goodness. When I celebrate the goodness, I get happiness and energy starts to come up. And that's one of the ways I've got this energy source inside, by focusing on the goodness. What happens when you focus on the badness? What sort of energies do you get? You get depressed, you get tired, you get really fed up. What's the point? And you can never get out of the ruts and the holes of life by focusing on the faults and the badness. You just get deeper and deeper into a hole. And you can always focus on the goodness. There's always something good there. We were talking the other day about even like the epitome of evil in the world. They were talking about not George Bush, but Adolf Hitler. I shouldn't do this. But he's not a bad guy, Adolf Hitler. I should have brought this, but every now and again, I don't know what I'm going to talk about, but every now and again I bring this poem, which is a poem about a love of a son for his mother. It's a very beautiful poem. I think the last time I brought it here was like Mother's Day. And it was a Friday night, or Mother's Day weekend, and I brought this poem and I read it out here. It's a beautiful poem about how you should look after your mother, how you should love her. And it doesn't matter what she's like, if she speaks a bit sort of roughly to you, she's your mum. So be careful for her, love her, and care, because she cared for you. Having read out this poem, then I read out the name of the author. as Adolf Hitler. A beautiful little poem by Adolf Hitler. And I love doing things like that, because that's like, what? How can... See how we judge? We always look at the bad side of a person. That bad side is there, but there's always the other side as well. Now we look at ourselves. We look at the people we live with. We look at life. What is your attitude towards life? Do you really want to be happy? This is one way of doing it. Focus on that happiness. If you start focus on that happiness, it grows. If you always... What's it like when people always look at your faults and tell you off? Do you really want to try to get better or just get fed up? It's amazing that when you start praising other people, you praise yourself. Mudita, rejoicing in other people's goodness, rejoicing in the goodness of life, rejoicing in your own goodness. When you praise, try it out. It grows, the goodness. You don't become a worse person, you become a better person. Life becomes better. You know that from your own experience. Where you work, how often is it your boss praises you for what you've done? And how often do they tell you off for all the rotten things or when you make a mistake? What would it be like if your boss started praising you? Would you work harder or would you work less? What happens if they're always on your back, criticizing you, pointing out your faults, saying you don't work hard enough? Does that make you work harder or you want to work less? It's obvious from your own experience, you should know that if you get praised and encouraged, you want to work harder. You want to live up to, you want to help out that person. That's why that somebody came to my monastery just last week. And they asked me, said, do you ever get angry? And I said, ask the other monks. And they asked one of the Anagarikas who'd been there a long time, said, I haven't seen Ajahn Brahm angry for years. And I don't shout at people. And that's why monks work so hard for me. On our committees, I asked the president, when was the last time I shouted at him? And that's why he works so hard. This is actually how you get people to help you. Because you want to help. You want to serve. You want to sort of look after people who are kind to you. So what I'm saying is when you focus on goodness, actually you get the most out of other people, the most out of life, and the most out of yourself. So we don't need to be overcritical. We need to develop much more mudita, celebrating, rejoicing in the goodness of ourselves. That's why when a person does do an act of goodness and kindness, go and celebrate it. Feel good about yourself. Pat yourself on the back. One of the people here was telling me that a year or two ago I asked him to give the katina cloth. We're having a katina ceremony at our monastery in a couple of weeks' time. It's a ceremony where the community comes together to offer a robe to the monks and have an almsgiving, and it's a celebration of the monks and the monasteries and the nuns. And every year we choose a different member of the community to offer the robe. And a few years ago when I asked one of the members here to actually, can you give the offering on behalf of one of the communities? So they started crying. They felt so happy. And that made them just high for weeks and weeks and weeks. And I told them, this is because of your goodness. And we're celebrating your goodness. Looking after the Buddhist society, all the stuff which you've done for them behind the scenes. Celebrating goodness. When we celebrate goodness like that, it creates so much happiness, so much joy. Think of all the good things you've done in your life. Celebrate them. Feel good about them. You've actually contributed. You're a good person. You've had your faults. Put them aside for a while and have mudita. Celebrate your goodness. And celebrate the goodness of others as well. Then life becomes a bit of a celebration. Instead of this miserable, depressed, look at the world, it's all going wrong. The bombing here and stuff happening there. Okay, that's true, but don't just dwell upon that 24 hours of the day. Balance. When you balance this life in that way, then you find you can have more happiness, and with that happiness, more energy, you can actually do more things and create more positive outcomes in the world. You don't create much at all when you're grumpy and upset. If you go out into the world trying to solve the world's problems, when you've got too many problems yourself, you're just adding to the world's problems. So this gives you energy to do things in a day, focusing on goodness, growing goodness. I call it watering the flowers instead of watering the weeds. You're watering the goodness, and you find it grows and grows and grows. You're growing in happiness and understanding, and you become more effective as a compassionate person in the world, compassionate to yourself, compassionate to others. It's amazing. There's two ways of dealing with problems. Sometimes you can actually look at the problems and get rid of those. It's like pulling out the weeds. And that's a fair way of solving the problem of weeds in your garden. But the other way is growing flowers. You grow so many flowers that they actually swamp the weeds. And the weeds just can't get any light because there's just too many flowers in your garden. It's the way of like growing goodness, growing what you call like wholesome qualities. You get so many wholesome qualities that they swamp all the bad qualities. The bad qualities can't come in. The simile which I've given before of like, you know, how to keep burglars out of your house. You know, you can have sort of guard dogs and alarm systems and stuff like that to keep burglars out of the house. The other way is have all your friends in your house. If you've got lots of good people and lots of friends in your house all the time, the burglars won't come to your house. There's too many people there. They get into trouble. They go to some other people's houses. It's what the Buddha actually said, the way to overcome unwholesome qualities in life or in your mind is to fill your mind with good things, with wholesome qualities. The Buddha actually taught this is part of the Eightfold Path. It's called the right efforts, the four right efforts, unwholesome things in your mind or in life, just get rid of them, try and avoid them in the first place. Good things in your life, encourage them, but if they're there, maintain them. It's like encouraging wholesome, good, happy, positive things in the world, which is what mudita is like. You're rejoicing in the goodness. Now, I don't want to be one-sided here and think that's all there is to life and you're just being really stupid, just thinking the world is wonderful, it's so good. This is all balance. If somebody just rejoices, and they don't see anything wrong with the world, then they're saying, you know, start to do some focusing on the faults as well. But for most people, we focus on the faults too much. We look upon the faults in the newspapers, we look upon it on the TV, we talk about the faults at work, we pick out each other's faults at home, always picky. Just listen to the way you talk. How many times in one day do you praise another person? How many times in one day do you praise yourself? And how many times in one day do you say words of criticism to others? And how many times in a day do you criticize yourself? I think you understand when you actually do a quick count why mudita is so important. Because we're too critical, too fault-finding. We just go over the top. And we get into this habit, this rut. And by mudita, we deliberately decide to celebrate our goodness and the goodness in others. The goodness in our husband, our wife, our kids. Poor old kids. You know, they have so many pressures on them. And we're sometimes always criticizing them, saying they sort of spend too much time on the computer, they do this, they do that. Praise is so important for a child, to know they're loved and they're respected and they're cared for. So please, you know, have some mudita to your child. You know, as a school teacher, I practiced that with the kids I taught when I was a school teacher before I became a monk. That's actually one of the reasons why I became a monk. Anyone teaching school would know what I mean. Little hooligans. No, they weren't that bad. But in this story, there was one kid, as there must be every year, who came bottom of the class. This poor child in a class of 30 came 30th. And when we give out the results, you know, you came first, second, third, fourth. This child came 30th. And you could see he looked so depressed and upset. Imagine what it's like, you know, come bottom of the class. You have to go home to your parents with your report, bottom. So I went up to this kid afterwards. I saw he's so depressed. And I he's a boy. And I said to him, look, don't be so depressed. And he said, what do you mean, sir? I'm bottom. I'm going to be in big trouble when I get home. He said, look, in Buddhism, because I was a Buddhist then, we've got this idea of like a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva is like someone who sacrifices their own happiness for the sake of others. And I said, like, you're like one of those bodhisattvas. You have taken this awful position of bottom of the class, so no one else has to suffer. It's such an enormous sacrifice you've made of becoming bottom, so no one else has to have this terrible position of being number 30. And he says, you know, you're just so kind and compassionate. You're much better than these other guys over here, being so selfish, just looking after how well they can do. You've actually thought of others by taking this terrible position. Actually, you deserve a medal for coming the 30th and being like the bodhisattva, sacrificing your own happiness for the sake of others. He thought I was crazy. But he laughed, and because he laughed and thought I was crazy, he got out of his depression for a few minutes. And of course, what does it matter, you know, 30th, you know, you come bottom of the class this time and come top the next time. You always change around. They didn't feel so bad. So it was an example of Ajahn Brahm's crazy mudita, like, you know, of finding something to celebrate about being bottom of the class. Are you bottom of your class? If you are the most abject, miserable failure in this world, it's a wonderful thing you're doing for other people. If you're a person who can't have a relationship with others because you can't maintain sort of a partner, it's a wonderful thing you're doing in this world by freeing these other people to form partnerships with other people so that they're not actually stuck with you. It's a marvelous thing you're doing. Whatever, excuse me. Whatever it is you're doing, you can always put it on that, see it in another way. And so celebrate some goodness in whatever happens in life. Imagine, you know, you have a cancer, you're going to die young. It's an amazing thing you're doing because people, all the taxes they pay, they don't have to pay for your pension. Oh, it's the most compassionate thing you're doing to die young. So, whatever it is, you can always look at it in a positive way. When you look in a positive way, it's a bit of like mudita. You're celebrating sort of life rather than always being miserable about it. You're celebrating the joy in life, which you can always find it there somewhere. You're celebrating the Buddha nature in other people, their goodness. You can see in your enemy something which you can respect. And from that you have a chance not to be the enemy anymore, but to make friends. The Jew in Israel can see something to respect in the Arab Muslim, someone they can love. And the Arab Muslim can see something they really care about in the Israeli Jew, rather than always focus on the terrible things which they do to each other. They can rejoice when it comes to the Jewish holy days. We can rejoice with them. When it comes to the Arab Muslim holy days, we can rejoice with them too. We can rejoice in other people's goodness. Imagine what would happen if we could do that, have mudita towards one another. How conflict can be solved when we find something to respect in our sworn enemies. How, when we go through divorces, we can find something in our ex, which means we don't hate them anymore. So all this problem and difficulties and trauma of separations can be healed. And most important, the divorce with ourselves, the separation with us from ourselves. It's a terrible thing, that part of you which you don't like, which causes depression, which causes so many of the psychological and physical problems of ourselves. Self-hate. Instead of focusing on all that's wrong, you can focus with mudita on our good qualities. We can rejoice in anything we find in ourselves which is beautiful, which is good, which is kind, which is wonderful. That's called mudita. When we do that deliberately, we find happiness grows and we actually do become better people. It's like we're putting this amazing, wonderful happiness, our friends in our house, and the burglars which take away our happiness and make us do stupid things haven't got a chance to come in. Because we're full of mudita. So that's a little talk, again off the cuff as usual, about the Buddhist quality of rejoicing in the goodness of other people, rejoicing in the goodness of life, rejoicing in the goodness of ourselves, so that we can have happiness and growth. It's a valid way of growing goodness in the world, instead of just looking at the faults and trying to fix up all the faults. So thank you for listening. That's the first of the season. Hope I'm in form. See what happens next week. So...